Hello, this is the Parent Panel. Every week we invite one mum and one dad onto the show to talk about the news and events of the week. Today we have a mum who has a big stuffed teddy bear as one of her besties, and our dad is a comedian who moonlights as a very successful auctioneer.
Well, sometimes you catch yourself just being bossed around. You're going, wait a second. Yes. I'm the adult.
Niamh one day took her nappy off and just rubbed it on the wall.
Oh, wow.
I kind of feel like parenting is a good antidote to my anal retentiveness.
I think you're still in the trenches with your kids.
I like the expression trenches. I sometimes call it the vortex.
The Parent Panel with Siobhan Hunt.
Rachel Coops is our mum. You may know her from play school. That's where all the kids know her from. But I know her as a yoga teacher, a very experienced yoga teacher, and mum of son Gabriel, who is six. Hello, Rachel.
Hello.
Nice to have you here. And Cam Knight is a comedian and dad of two boys. Archie is five, and Oscar, who's almost three.
He's three now.
Oh, man. Look, Cam, I have to explain the auctioneer thing because I didn't know you did this.
I didn't either, but now I went stalking
you on Instagram.
Yeah. I've done a few of them this year now.
You're very good at
Thank
it.
Thank you. I raise a lot of money. I just harass people and bag out the prizes. And for some reason, people throw their hands up and we raise thousands of dollars for charities.
Didn't you like raise 10 grand?
We raised 10 grand for Batir, which helps, which is a great charity that that helps teenagers deal with anxiety and depression. And also I did another auction for them on the last weekend. And then on Are You OK Day, I did another auction for those guys, raising money again.
Think about maybe moving into real estate.
I don't want to do real estate. I like the idea that I'm raising money for a good cause. Real estate is the devil's work.
That's true. But it would be quite funny having a comedian at an auction.
What's wrong with you? Where's your money? Stop calling China. Yeah.
All right, our topics today are how much say partners have over childbirth, are parents drinking too much wine, and birthday party lolly bags. But first up today, losing at Survivor, winning at life.
So I guess I could donate my time and money.
Cash money, I'm gonna make it rain.
I only donated all this money so I can make a mockery of their cause.
Show me the money!
But it's not right.
I will not be accepting your money anymore.
When Australian Survivor contestant Luke Toki, I don't watch Survivor, can you tell, was booted off the show on Monday night, his fans went into a complete meltdown. Apparently, he was a favourite for the audience because he was this lovable larrikin, or is this lovable larrikin, and he also has three children at home with special needs. His two sons are on the autism spectrum, and his little girl, who was only 6 weeks old when he left for Survivor, was diagnosed with cystic fibrosis. So one super fan started a GoFundMe page, which looks like it's going to surpass, if it hasn't already, the prize money on offer for the Survivor winner. Rachel, it's one thing to go on a show and put yourself out there to win money for your family. It's another thing to have people raise the similar or greater amount, like we're talking $500,000. If you were Luke, would you feel comfortable accepting that money, or would it feel a bit strange to be taking that money from strangers?
I think I would feel uncomfortable, but at the same time, it's an interesting idea and concept that reality TV audiences are actually taking control beyond network control. And initially, that was the whole point, right? Is that the audience gets to have some say. So I say good on the audience.
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't look at it that way. Yeah, cool. What about you, Cam?
I take money from strangers all the time.
are you sitting out the front?
Unwillingly. just shake them loose. No. Well, as a comedian, that's what I do, you know. Like, there's an exchange there, so I take money from them. I don't know really who they are. If I have any super fans out there that are listening right now, by all means, please do a GoFundMe. We did a budget recently, my wife and I, which made me want to walk out into traffic. But I wouldn't live in Sydney, so I'd probably have to pay a bloody toll on it. But we discovered that our daycare last year cost us 30 grand. Yeah. That's crazy. I mean, what are they teaching? One of them still poos himself. They're not at that price, they should be coming back speaking Mandarin. You know, Ni Hao Dad. I'd be like, oh, that's money well spent. But this is, I need that. Everyone needs to get by. So if you've got a super fan that wants to get you half a mil Yeah, go for it.
We're going to put that out there, actually. Any super fans who'd like to support Cam Knight.
Yes, please. Yeah. I've got daycare fees to cover.
We'll start a page.
I've got to say, though, my youngest goes to school next year, and I'm thinking about taking his childcare funds and just putting in a fund for my hair. To get my hair
just you,
just me,
totally
great.
Except I was going to try and hide that from my partner, which is
now that's going to happen now. You've just stuffed it up.
Damn it!
I think it's a good thing. There was an artist called Amanda Palmer that she's a singer songwriter, and she really connected with her fans online, and raised I think like $1 million or over $1 million to make an album. So she didn't have to go through the normal channels. You know, she just bypassed having to deal with record label and all of that sort of corporate hoopla, and just got to make an album that she wanted to make and give it to her fans because they helped fund that. And I think that's amazing. I think that's great.
And I think that's the thing, because there are no normal channels anymore.
No.
As an artist, you can't have a career the way you used to.
Yeah, for sure.
So we have to embrace the new wave of new channels, and it's a whole new landscape.
The interesting thing I find, the question in my head is about the ethics of it. In a sense, someone raised in the office when we were talking about this, they had friends who had been going through particularly difficult times with illness or something similar, and a friend had started a GoFundMe page for them. And the person in the office was saying it was almost like people had ownership over the money and what the person did with it. So there was an awkward transaction between the person who needed the money and the person and the people who raised the money. So I understand how it would work with artists, because essentially there has always been a transaction in the services you provide and what you get back. But and maybe that's what Luke Tocchi is now, because he was on TV. But I wonder in the community when that happens, and you might be desperate for help and really need the money, and then all of a sudden all these people give it to you, and you're like, actually, I need to spend a little bit of that money taking my family on a holiday so that they can just regroup, et cetera, et cetera. And then someone goes, oh, no, that was for your chemo, not for a holiday.
Yeah, okay. Well, too late. Money's in the bank, mate. See ya.
That's it. You give and just,
Sorry.
But isn't it also that we don't have communities the way we used to? Like, we don't live in tribes. And potentially this is the new community. Potentially it's like, well, I don't live next door to my friends and family anymore. I do want to help. How can I help? And maybe it's also because we don't live like that anymore. This is a new way to assist families in times of need. And
people don't ask for help.
No.
So they could be really in dire straits and everyone's wanting to help, but you're not going to go up to someone and go, here's $20.
No.
Good luck with all the rest of it.
I like that this is a direct channel, though. Like, these people get that money and no one's sort of skimming off the top. You know, there's so many different charities out there that legally only have to give a certain percentage of their gross to that charity, and then the rest of it sort of goes into their business and helping pay them. And so a lot of that sort of, you know, it gets really watered down. So this is just a direct hunk of money that just goes, boom, there you go. I like that. There's no other person getting involved and touching it.
All right, well, we started on a serious note. Maybe the next one will be serious. I'll see what you have to say.
I'll chuck some jokes in there. It's
all right.
Okay,
thank you. You are the comedian. How much say should partners get in the labour ward?
You say no epidural, I say epidural.
Am I partial to no epidural? Yes. Why? Because I'm a hypochondriac. I'm afraid of drugs. My mom didn't use an epidural. Lizzie didn't. I meet women all the time who didn't choose to use epidural.
Would you get a root canal without any drugs?
I love that analogy. A root canal is not comparable because you're not born to go through a root canal. As a woman, your body is genetically engineered to give birth.
Well, listen, next time you can do this.
So that's actress Shay Mitchell talking to her partner, former Entertainment Tonight presenter Matt Babel. Anyway, if you didn't catch it, he's basically saying he doesn't agree with epidurals during labour. I'm going to go to you first, Cam.
Do. Please do.
Putting aside all the problems with that statement, you know, including mortality rates, maternal mortality rates before we had medical intervention like epidurals to assist with birth. Just how much say should the non-birthing partner, male or female, have in the birthing process of the person going through it?
Zero. Shut up.
Correct
answer.
It's
not your body. It's not your choice. You can sit there and have a discussion with them, but at the end of the day, that person is carrying that child, and what they want to do and how they want to do it is up to them entirely. And, like, that is ridiculous. If I mean, seriously, he wouldn't... You get a man, him in that room, pregnant, passing that watermelon through the eye of the needle, he would be like, give me drugs, give me... Can you imagine a man being pregnant? They couldn't do it. They'd be like, what do you mean I can't drink for 9 months? They just... Like, you girls... I saw my partner do that. She did it drug-free, transformed, went to a place. Like, there's no way I would ever do that, by the way. I wouldn't do it, even if it was an option on Fear Factor or something. But they're like, for $1 million, give birth or eat a truckload of cockroaches. I'd be like... Back them in and bring some milk, right? Like, that is the closest thing to God I'll ever understand. Like, I saw that and just went, I'm a redundant piece of shit. Like, I will never be able to beat that or equal that in any way. Like, I think that you are the superior sex of the species. Like, you carry a child for 9 months of the day, 9 months of the year, and get on with your day. Like, I don't even like carrying my kids to the car, right? Like, that's... Shut up, mate. Just to, oh, my mum and my sister did this. Well, everybody's different. Everyone is, you know, other things. They need different things. So just your job is to support them with whatever decision they make. Shut up and do your job. You're like a boxing coach in there. That's it. Just pat them down, give them some Hydrolite, tell them they're doing great and go again. That's basically it. That's what it is.
Rach, I'm going to throw in the devil's advocate here because even though I 100% support what Cam is saying
there. We're on a rant there, sorry.
And my husband would have been, you know, trembling in his boots. You know, he wouldn't have dared to suggest what I do because I'm quite scary, and particularly when I'm in labour. But the thing that came up for me, as ridiculous as what it was that he was saying, I thought, well, I don't know what it's like to be on the other side and to have that... you know, like I said, if there's someone there, whether they're male or female, going, this is a child that's coming out of this person, I mean, should they ethically have a say in how we choose to do it? I love as I'm saying that, in my head I'm going, no.
Yeah, I think we're all on the same page here.
I think we're all on the same page.
I think there's no way of playing devil's advocate, is there?
No.
Not at all. No one's going to be like, well,
no.
I see where you're coming from.
I think women birth the way they feel safest. Mm-hmm. So if a woman is like, I am so terrified of labour, I never want to do that in my life, and they choose to have all the drugs and book in for the Caesar and however they want to do it, they're going to have the best birth outcome. And if someone is like, I am determined to have a water birth and no drugs, they're going to feel safer in that environment. So I think it's genuinely just about choice. And I think a partner's role is to fight for that choice, whatever it is.
Yeah, that's true.
There was, sorry to interject again. Like, I did, like, my wife did say she didn't want anything. And at the tail end, you know, during the transition, when it was too late to get drugs, she was... You know, she did.
Change my mind.
And was essentially screaming for drugs. And we were like, we're there, mate, we're there. You know, so we just had to calm her through it and like sort of distract her in a sense. So I took her on a little journey. I grabbed her and like spoke to her and took her on a walk through Centennial Park in this, so we're going through this. And then like we got about halfway through it and then she went, oh, shut up, I know what you're doing. And by then we were crowning and we were away. Like it had happened. But she had asked me specifically, you know, if I do start demanding, please, let's stick to my birth plan. And I was like, okay, well, I'm going to. And she's like, I retract everything I've said. And I'm like, well, I don't know. Like, I'm going to try and respect your wishes. You know?
I think after I had my son, the midwife, they had a intern there, and she said to me at the end, wow, you know, you did really well. You've got such a high pain threshold. And I looked at her and I went, what do you mean? She said, well, you didn't even ask for an epidural. And I went, I was allowed to ask for an epidural because he was my second and they'd waited for longer for me to go in. So I figured by the time I got in there and I was kind of in the zone, I just didn't think it was an option.
Yeah.
So, okay. But you're right. I think...
However you feel safe.
I couldn't imagine what kind of comments Matt Babel... What kind of name is that? It's M-A-T-T-E. Matty.
Mate.
Matty. Matt.
Hey, mate. Makes it easy for everyone to remember his name.
Mate Babel.
Hey, mate.
Mate Babel.
All right. There has been a big pushback on wine mum culture. That is, mums posting their glass of wine after a harrowing day with their kids. So is the pushback fair enough or has it gone too far? That's what we're talking about next on the Parent Panel.
I'm taking some me time. You want in?
I'm going to have a glass of wine.
I just need a break from the baby.
I'm sure I'll be fine if I could just put my feet up.
So a while back, there was an outcry against mums drinking wine. And it was basically pushback against all these Insta or Facebook messages where mums would take a photo of their wine and go, I've made it. And the argument was that it's unhealthy and unhelpful to promote drinking this way, and that actually many women have a serious problem with alcohol, which I think is a valid argument. But at the time, I remember thinking, oh, come on, it's just one glass. And a writer in Motherly in the US has questioned the interpretation of mums and wines. She's saying, look, it's we're not seeing the whole picture. Like sometimes maybe it might be a problem, and other times it's just women embracing a little time out for themselves. Rachel, was the pushback against mum's wine time legitimate and fair, or do you think it went too far?
Look, the reality is she may post the picture and 5 minutes later she's probably passed out on the couch watching Netflix. we all know Instagram's not real. However, I think it's a funny thing, perception. So I don't drink at home, mainly because I'm a single parent and I don't want to drink by myself. I don't want to drink a glass of wine at home. So my son never sees me drink wine at home, ever, ever, right? But last year for preschool, they do the Mother's Day thing and they answer all the questions. You know, my mum is, it's like, my mum is into yoga. My mum's favourite thing is to drink wine. My mum's favourite drink is wine. When my, what does your mum like to do? Work and drink wine with her friends. And I'm like, he has never.
He's like, he's been watching Sex in the City while you're out
the room.
He's
never seen me once drink at home, but I think he must see how happy I am if we're out and I have a glass of wine with my friends.
Like, oh, wow.
So, but when I looked at the wall, what was hilarious, and all the mums started to text each other, I'm like, so you like to drink vodka, do you? Because all the kids have gone, my mum's favourite drink is vodka. My mum's favourite drink is beer. Now, does it mean we're all alcoholics? I don't know. Like, is it, I think there's so much around the perception of it. And I think, of course, it's dangerous if you're at home having bottles of wine. If I was a single parent drinking bottles of wine every night. But for me, the reality of him seeing me have a glass of wine and enjoy time with my friends, if then it gets perceived by everyone at school that I'm an alcoholic, that's problematic, no? And quite frankly,
I don't think it said my mum's favourite thing is to pass out under the table with her pants around her ankles. Like, it's just you having a glass of wine, mate.
Don't you
know
think?
What I mean? It'd be a bit different if my mum's favourite thing to do is dance on the table crying to Alanis Morissette. You know, there's a big difference.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it, right? Yeah.
Yes. Totally. Did you go into class and just go, I just have to explain.
Seriously. I also think, you know, kids are, they're not silly. And so they're not going to write something. They're not going to write
so
something
stupid.
Like, my mum.
Sorry.
My mum drinks 10 bottles of wine. And yeah. But going into school, I definitely felt like a great sense of camaraderie with the other mums because I'm like, okay, cool. We're all in the same boat. And I do think it's like, look, you've taken our social lives away from us. You've taken...
It was your choice.
It was okay, it was my choice. But now this small terrorist is here and it's like, please don't take wine away from me.
Yeah, that's right.
Please don't take one glass of wine a week, you know.
I'm just going to keep that one there.
I'm just going to keep that.
Yeah. Now, I know, Cam, that...
Cam, that you're an alcoholic.
No, that you've been sober for... You haven't...
I've been sober for over 2.5 years.
Yeah, because yes. I read your Instagram.
Thank you for stalking me. Can you please start a GoFundMe? Half a million nights. Appreciate it. Super
mate,
fan.
If I'm starting a GoFundMe page, it's for me. So, what's your take on this?
My take on it? Look, I watched a really great documentary on SBS. I think it was on Insight, where they had a bunch of mums on there that were talking about this very topic and saying that the percentages of alcoholics had increased in Australia because of this whole reward system. People weren't just having one glass of wine and it was blowing out and it did become a bit of a crutch and it is, you know, it became a necessary tool to get through the day each and every day. I noticed definitely that my relationship with alcohol and my patterns changed with the kids. I was sort of doing the same thing because I look after them. I work nights most of the time, so I had them during the day. So I was clock watching. I had rules for myself, you know, like I would clock watch. It wouldn't be until 5 o'clock, knowing that the day was done. I'd done a great job. Good on your dad. Pat on the back. They're eating dinner. Nobody died today. Let's have a beer. But then I would slowly drink more as I was doing dinner and then bath and then bedtime. So by the time they're asleep, I've probably finished a six pack and it's Tuesday. You know, and then also on top of that, if I'm going out for a gig, I'd be drinking heavily at gigs. And then I just noticed this pattern. I was just drinking every day, essentially, which became problematic. And it was distracting me from doing my job properly as a dad and just a human, I think. Like, I just thought I need to stop this and nip it in the bud because I was an everyday
drinker. And that's an interesting the analogy of the time frame and rewarding yourself at the end, because it's definitely having children at home is hard, but also if you have a special needs child. I've known people who have had special needs children, and there is no other support for them. There is no other release for them except for having that wine at the end of the day. And if you add on top of that...
There's nothing wrong with having a wine at the end of the day. Mm. What's wrong is like finishing that bottle of wine and then going looking for something else and there's nothing there, so you drink the sake, you know, or the cooking wine, or you're like going searching and then you're drinking vodka and it's like, what's happened?
Yeah,
like that's the problem.
That's
like
the slope.
Just being aware, like not everyone just is who's having a glass of wine is an alcoholic. It's when you start looking for certain times, you know, you're like, well, maybe I can drink here, and then you start making excuses. And you, like, I didn't know that I had a problem, like, honestly, because it's such a drinking is such a huge part of Australian culture, and it's part of a comedian's culture as well. Like, we drink to celebrate good gigs, we drink to commiserate bad ones. I didn't think there was anything wrong with that until my wife said, I think you've got a problem with alcohol, you know. And I was like, oh, I think I'm pretty bloody good at it, you know, like I practice every day. And so I just sort of listened to her. I went to the AA website just to have a look, and they've got a little online test you can take. And I was like, oh, well, how hard's this, you know? Apparently not very, because I smashed it. Like, I got like an A+, or an AAA+, and I'd never had an A+ in anything before, so I had about 10 beers to celebrate. And then just thought, well, now, you know, I'll give it a crack. So I sort of, in my head, I was going to stop for a year, because I hadn't done that. I'd never, since I started drinking in my teens, I'd never gone, hey, have a rest. You know, I think the longest I'd gone is maybe 3 months, you know. And so I thought, I'll take a year off. And then once that year ticked over, I was like, well, I'll just go again. You know, I'll see if I'll do another year. And now I'm just kind of like, well, I'm done. You know, it just works better for me. I don't get as tired either, you know. Which is good. So it's up to you.
That's
like,
so interesting.
I don't want to judge anybody's said, actions. You know,
no, but
mine.
As soon as you said tired, I went, oh, mate, maybe I should give up coffee.
No, no way. Never.
No.
Let's, yes,
no.
Let's have this. That's a full podcast.
You want to take wine
love.
And coffee.
Do not
now.
Do that.
Oh, no. I'm not going to stop any of it, Rach. Okay, our final topic in just a moment. What do you do with all the party lolly bags? Parenting, they say, takes a village.
It's about experimenting and finding out what works best for your child.
You don't learn when you're scared. So all those strategies under the guise of discipline, they're counterproductive.
Feed, Play, Love is the bite-sized parenting podcast that's a village in your pocket. Short interviews with experts and real parents about everything from managing tantrums to making sure you get regular date nights. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Feed, Play, Love.
That's a nice bag of candy you got.
Our candy bags aren't that big, so we're making extra room in our internal candy bags.
You ate that entire bag of candy.
So I have to say, sorry, Deb, our producer, who put all that together, but it's lollies, people, not candy. Every year I say to my kids, especially in the lead up to Halloween, it is not lollies. Candy. But there does come a point in every parent's life where birthday parties for kids are more frequent than you ever went out to parties in your 20s. And over the years, people have talked about how you can handle the present things. So, you know, there's the fiber birthday party. There are donations to...
Is that the fiber birthday party? What?
That would be shocking. No,
what is that?
Fiver.
Oh,
five, so
what's
you,
that?
You give $5
right.
instead of a present. So the parents say, we're having a fiver party.
Oh, cool. Okay, that's better than me just going, hey, here's some Metamucil. Happy birthday, mate.
Novacom.
Poo well, buddy. Go strong.
Sorry. Here's some roughage. Yeah. Here's some greens instead.
It's like, what?
I want someone to have a themed fiber party.
It's a fiber party.
Pulling that yeah. back. Yeah, so my thing is I presents are not my problem. Lolly bags are my problem because my daughter's in primary school. My son's about to go to primary school, and that's where all the parties happen. So in one weekend, we could have like six party bags in the house. And so I'm wondering, Cam, what do you do with the lolly bags? Do you...
Oh, yeah.
What do you do? Do you hide
skim.
Them?
Yeah,
you
skim and just anything hard that would hurt his teeth or, you know, damage his teeth, we just sort of take out. We quickly sort of grab it. He runs over. We actually went to a birthday party the other weekend that was like something from when I went to... When I was a kid, and I was sitting
awesome.
There going, oh, so many helicopter parents will be having a conniption right now. They did Red Rover, and I'm like, this was banned at my school. This is on, you know. And kids were hurt. They got hurt. They had a pinata as oh,
pinatas
well, man.
So
someone got knocked out.
Like, it was so crazy. And again, yeah, there was a pile-on. As soon as it broke out, yeah. everyone there was a massive pile-on. This girl got crushed, and I was just sitting there going, oh, this is crazy. My kid came over with just handfuls of stuff from this pinata, and we just picked out... like a few and then gave him, you know, like the chocolate ones. I was fine with that because he's had chocolate, but anything sort of hard, we just sort of removed that. And he didn't know, like he was too busy, you know.
Damn, I wish my kids were that oblivious. Mm.
Yeah, yeah.
Like they know exactly what's in each
yeah.
lolly bag.
Mm. Right.
They look straight away.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm. Well, they
so
do, but then you can easily, you just do sleight of hand, you know. So even, because they don't, we just go, hey man, like I said to him, give it here, I'll put it in the bags. That way you won't lose it because you're running around everywhere. And he's like, yeah, okay. And I'm like, so we'll have a secret stash, you know. And so then we did that and then I just took them out and then just kept just a
You've
few
You've started
things
early, that's good. No, it's yeah. too late for me.
But I think, yeah. look, there's nothing, look, the same thing, some parents now as well, they're not doing like proper full sugar or full fat chocolate cakes. We went to a birthday party where they made, and man, it was yuck. They made a cake. It was like
avocado
and yeah. cocoa and kale. And I'm like, I didn't come here for salad cake, mate. Like, I want full chocolate. Where's, what is going on here? That was a fiber party cake right there. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like, who, where did you even get this weird concoction from?
It was, they probably made it.
It was so, and you're sitting there eating it. And I bit in and chewed. I'm like, this tastes like dope cake. Like, it was... totally tastes like a wet brownie. And I'm like, what are you? I don't know if I'm into this at all. I'd rather just, it's a special treat, you know. It's not like
oh,
they
dude,
get that much
you,
stuff
wait,
with us.
Is he at school yet?
He's starting school next year. Mm-hmm. I know.
We'll have
I
this
know.
Conversation
yeah, we
after
will.
School.
I know.
Because
I don't want to do it. Like, they eat really well. They eat lots of fruit and veg and stuff mm. like that, you know, and it is a real treat for them to get those things at the moment. But I am. We are very aware
Look
of it
at us,
and
Rachel
trying.
And I like
the cynical
primary
eyes.
School.
I know. And I wasn't allowed it either as a kid. I wasn't allowed any sugar, any mm. lollies. I wasn't allowed to drink any soft drink because I was mental. Like yeah. I only just got diagnosed with ADHD last year. And I've only, so they were, mum and dad knew something was wrong. And so I'm sitting there looking at my kids going, right, you don't need any more.
You've got my
yeah.
genes.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm skimming for that purpose mm. as well, trying to avoid them climbing the walls and wrecking my house. You yeah. know?
That's fair enough. I mean, how yeah. do you go, Rach? Because we had the commiserating eye look there in terms yeah. of, yeah, no, my kid, no
so
skimming happening there.
I was that person until Halloween when he was four. I think he was four. And it was our first Halloween. And I was like, you know what? All bets are off. You go for it. And we went to this crazy street in Bronte.
Oh, the famous
street.
Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it was literally yeah. like, all the kids are dressed up and all the houses, if you buy in that street, you have to get on board. And like Gabriel is like in this full-on vampire outfit. And so every house they go to, they're like having a lolly. And I'm like, okay, let it go. Okay, let it go. And it just they're getting more and more mental. So everyone goes to the park at the end of the street once the street's done for the kids to run around like the poltergeist. So like, and it was so full on. And then suddenly Gabriel stops in the middle of the park, looks at me with
these terror eyes, rips his pants down, and does this giant poo in the middle of like an emergency sugar poo.
Like a crack addict in Vegas. Just
And I'm the parent whose kid has done the giant Halloween shit. And, like, what do you do with that? Do you get a doggy bag?
You get a dog to get a doggy bag? It up.
No. I'm looking for a plastic bag to pick it up. Like, how do you... I went to my car. I got a plastic bag. I had to get wipes. Like, it was all kinds of bad.
Wow.
For me, that was a turning point for both of us.
Definitely.
Because he actually, since that point... Because before that, I was sugar-free and I was really conscious and careful. But I think he got such a shock, and I got such a shock that after that, he will literally eat half a piece of cake and go, I've had enough now.
Oh, good.
He knows.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, lesson. Parents everywhere, just
That's
feed
so
them
sweet.
Lots of sugar.
Let them, you know, let them get to a point, like me,
yes.
where they can just go too hard
enough.
And they're like, I've had enough.
Yeah.
Right.
Or like, you know, the story of getting your kids
to smoke
a whole
packet
of cigarettes.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was my experiment. I'm not saying it was a great one.
Yeah.
But that's how we roll now.
I love that.
Oh, my God. I don't know what I can take away from that. I'm just going to let it process.
Great.
I'm not sure either of those options are going to work for me now, but thanks for sharing. that was our last topic. And before I let you go, I do like to know what's going on in your lives that you'd like people to know about. And Rachel, I know that you have started a Kickstarter campaign for something very special. Can you tell us about it?
Yes. So this is a project we've been working on for many years. We shot the pilot last year. It's basically bringing together storytelling, kids moving their bodies, having a growth mindset, trying new things, and inspiring kids to be out in nature. So it's a kids' story time yoga show. And we
I've offended you now, haven't I, with the kale. You did you're a kale avocado cake.
Did you not just hear the Halloween story?
Yeah, <I'm kidding. laughs>
So we
Kickstarter is different from GoFundMe, just saying, putting it out there.
Yeah, and look, we were like, what if people could just pay to get the series in advance? So they get the series before everyone else, they get access to it. And we've been on quite a journey meeting with networks and corporate sponsors. And I just got to the point where I said to Tash, I just want to make what we made. And it's one of those dream projects that if we can't do exactly what we wanted to do, then let's let it go. So it's been a massive learning curve because I didn't realize like Kickstarter is a whole thing. It's really full on. It's like a full-time job, man. But we're just going for it and we'll see
what
happens.
What's it called? So people want
Rachel and the Minis.
Rachel and the Minis. I've got to admit, I have seen it. It looks fantastic. And you've got like animation as part of the storytelling.
Animation. So it's like inspiring kids to use their imagination and tell stories and move their bodies through screen time. So we want to use the inevitability of looking at screens in the preschool to kindy age and get them to do something that makes them want to be outside and imagine and dream. And
it is fabulous. So we'll put a link in the notes of this episode so you can go to that Kickstarter page. And Cam, for people in Sydney, sorry, rest of the country, until we have a GoFundMe tour page.
That's right. When I get that half mil, I'll be coming to you.
Page, yes. But in the meantime, you are doing some shows in Sydney this weekend.
Yeah, Sydney Fringe is on and we just had a show on last night. I'm doing a split show with a fabulous comedian called Christine Ryan. She's from Canberra and she won Best Newcomer for the Sydney Comedy Festival this year, and
does
it's
that
basically
mean she's better than you?
She's better. Yeah, I've not yet won an award. God damn it! What is wrong with me? I've got good reviews, but anyway,
you got to be in it to win it.
I am. Yes. So we're doing a show. It's just called Vintage Selection, and it's basically we're doing a couple of sketches and doing about 25 minutes of new material, and we're just testing it out. A few songs and stuffing around. And it was great last night. Yeah, I play guitar with her and we wrote a couple of songs. And
awesome.
I'm just doing something different because usually I just do straight stand-up. And because it's Fringe, I thought, oh, well, let's just...
Do something fringy.
Do something fringy. It is. And I did say that when we did the opening song. I was like, there's your fringy bit. which went down well. Tomorrow night, Friday. Well, tonight? When is it?
Friday night.
Friday night, 7 o'clock, Factory Theatre, and Sunday night, 6 o'clock, Factory Theatre. Show goes, but they go for an hour.
So
you can find tickets on the internet.
That's a good time frame for parents.
Yes,
think.
It is.
An hour?
She's a parent as well.
Okay, well, we'll pop links to that as well in the notes. Guys, thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure.
You've been listening to The Parent Panel, a Babyology podcast, hosted and written by Siobhan Hunt, produced and edited by Debbie Ning. For more information on the show or to check out other episodes with equally funny and insightful guests, you can find all you need at our website, babyology.com.au/parentpanel.